Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mainly the British ones. I'm Eamon Clark, and my guest for this episode is a writer and comics illustrator, but he's also, by day, teaches animation and digital design at university. And most notably for us, he's now a writer for Commando Comics. It's a very warm book club welcome to Colin Maxwell. Colin, welcome to the book club.
Hello, Eamon. Thanks so much for having me here.
Well, we finally got round to it, Colin. We seem to have been talking about this at Thought Bubble for the last few years.
We have been, yes. But we are here, yeah.
We're here. We finally managed to sort out a date and get on and do it. So, Colin, we're going to be talking about some classic and some newer British comics in a moment. But before we do that, as a first-timer in the book club, we get to hear about your own comics journey, and particularly how you started reading comics and which British comics were on your radar.
Sure. Well, it was all down to my dad, really, because he was the comics fan in the house. He used to get the Hotspur and the Victor regularly, and he would pick up any kind of new books that were coming out. So Warlord, 2000 AD, Star-Lord. I remember all of these coming out, and my dad would usually pick up, you know, maybe the first issue or the first few issues. We'd not always stick with them. You know, Victor and Hotspur were his thing. So I do actually remember getting all of those books at some point when they first came out. In fact, I'm sure I had a Space Spinner, which ended up in the very large bramble bush at the back of my mum and dad's house. And it's probably still there somewhere, you know, but it's just impossible to get to it. And bizarrely enough, I also remember having the Warlord dagger badge. It was kind of a thing that went round your neck and it had a strange sort of W at the top for Warlord. But bizarrely, I wasn't even 5 years old when that came out. Because I had to look it up because I remember having it. But clearly my dad bought Warlord, you know, and had that issue in 1976, I think it came out. And I had that. So I might not have been reading Warlord as such. I might have been just looking at the pictures at that age. But I certainly was a bit of a prodigious reader, I think, because I certainly read 2000 AD pretty soon after it came out. I remember reading Mach 1. I think that was one of my favourite stories at the time. And I really remember Star-Lord coming out because it's so different. You know, it's a different book. It's just too expensive for me to buy in my pocket money at 12 pence.
Fantastic stuff. And from there, I mean, did you at some point go back and read some of these classic British comics, the ones that you could find?
Yes, I would. If it's kind of hard to get comics where I lived. I mean, our local shop would tended to get the DC Thompson comics. So Battle and things weren't really around at the time. But I do remember things like Tornado and Eagle and Scream coming out, and that would be later, it would be kind of the 80s or late 70s, and me reading them. And I must have read an awful lot of comics because I just remember them so vividly. And to be honest, I kind of fell out of comics, you know, when I got into my early 20s. I never returned to them until about 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. And what was it that got you back to them 10 years ago?
Because I started writing a comic.
Ah, right.
And also the Dunfermline, the city where I live, got its first comic shop. So about 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago.
Fantastic stuff. Right, well, we'll talk a little bit about some of the difficulties of reading these older comics, particularly in the 21st century, although it is, you know, we'll talk about why it's getting slightly easier in a while. But tell us, what is the book we've decided on for your visit to the book club?
Well, we have got Codename Warlord, which is the new volume that's just been released from DC Thompson under their Commando Presents banner. So now in print, because it was digital for a wee while.
Yes, so we were talking about this off air because I've got the two digital copies and you've got a lovely big, quite large hard copy in front of you. So this reprint story is from Warlord comic from 1974. It's obviously a DC Thompson comic. Creator credits for this, as we've been talking about, are quite difficult to find out. We believe Roger Kettle wrote certainly the initial Codename Warlord. I don't know if he carried on writing them. There's some art in there by Horatio Altoona, but there must be others.
Yeah, the first six stories, in fact, you know, there's maybe two or three different artists on there. Just looking at it, you know, you can tell there are different artists. And they were, I think, the first six published stories. So right from the offset, it wasn't just one artist that was going to be doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Colin, we talked about it on and off at a few, as I say, thought bubbles as to what we might get you on the book club to talk about. Why was it particularly this one that appealed to you?
There was a lot of chat about Warlord, wasn't there? I mean, it's the 50th anniversary this year. And I remember that, you know, the digital's coming out, I think, last year. And then everybody was saying, oh, we really want a print version of this. We want a print version. And then suddenly, you know, out of the blue, without any kind of warning, it was there, you know, and it was announced. For me, it is probably one of the earliest comics that I read was Warlord. I remember having the Warlord dagger, you know, way back in, badge back in 76, which I think, I did my research, and I think it came out with issue 69 of Warlord. So I remember having that, and I wasn't even 5 years old at that time, you know, so I was clearly looking at the pictures more perhaps than actually reading the stories.
Well, just give us a quick background of Warlord, the comic itself, before we get to the actual codename Warlord story. As we said, starting in 1974.
Yes, indeed. And quite a different comic, certainly from DC Thompson's perspective. In styling, it was a purely war comic, whereas something like The Victor or Hotspur were a bit of a mix of sport and war and other kind of, you know, spooky stories and things and comic stories, you know, cartoons. This was a very focused, you know, wartime stories, mostly World War II, but there were other wars covered in there, including, you know, more modern stuff with the Harrier Squadron. It looked different as well. You know, had very action-orientated covers. Instead of, you know, a lot of kind of comics at the time had a cover story with several panels kind of starting off a story. But this had, you know, usually a full figure, you know, in an action pose. I think it kind of mimicked a little bit some of the American comics around at the time, the character comics. So they'd have a big, you know, main character on the front, whether it's Peter Flint, the codename Warlord, or Union Jack Jackson, or one of these other big-time characters. And then internally, it looked a bit different as well. A lot less panels, again, perhaps indicative of the influence of American comics at the time. And it was this whole look was massively influential on the comics that came after it, whether that was, you know, Battle or Action or even 2000 AD.
Yes, because you're helping me, first of all, you're helping me tick off another British comic off the list to have covered. But also, I think an ongoing project is tracing the evolution that led to 2000 AD. And obviously, we've extended it back to Action, which comes out of Battle. And of course, Battle comes out of Warlord, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the big rivalry between DC Thompson and, you know, whoever it was back in the day, IPC, Fleetway, to kind of outdo each other and try and come up with new concepts. And, you know, it became a kind of copycat kind of story of them kind of creating a book on a particular theme. And then, you know, there'd be a tit for tat kind of back and forth. Yeah,
absolutely. Now, I confess I didn't know very much about Warlord. And the only character I could probably have named was codename Warlord. Possibly, you've already mentioned the other one, Union Jack Jackson, which I know is a particular favourite of Simon Belmont, who's a book clubber. And I think you know Simon, don't you?
Yes, indeed. Yes. Yeah, Union Jack Jackson, an oddball character, a Brit working alongside, you know, the US Marines. Very popular and, you know, certainly lasted its time in Warlord. That's for sure.
It did, yeah. And I remember Paul Trimble talking about Clash of the Guards as being sort of the other way around. Union Jack Jackson was a Brit with an American unit, and then Clash of the Guards is an American with a British unit, isn't it?
Yeah, that like we were saying, you know, that classic tit for tat.
Tit for tat.
Yeah, there's lots of other really good stories in there, you know, that were kind of groundbreaking at the time. You know, you've got it's Sergeant Raker, you know, a black soldier in the American Army during World War II. We've got Goom, who, you know, a Arabic soldier fighting for the Brits in the deserts of North Africa. And also, you know, one of these stories where we're getting it from the other side, you know, from the German side, we had Camp Group Falken. We were a kind of a penal colony, sort of bunch of misfits, kind of your dirty dozen. But, you know, Germans fighting on the Eastern Front. So quite a bunch of really different stories there that were nothing you would have seen elsewhere. You know, Victor, Hotspur, etc., the other comics at the time really didn't touch those things at all.
So let's get to the title character then. Now tell us about who is Codename Warlord.
So Lord Peter Flint is the character who becomes Warlord or Codename Warlord. He is a minor aristocrat from somewhere in England. I don't think it's ever revealed exactly, you know, where. Somewhere down south anyway, certainly close to London because he's there quite a lot. And he gets recruited to become a spy, basically, and work behind enemy lines on special missions. But how that all comes about is revealed in the very first story, which is reprinted in this new volume. And he's a race driver, and he's competing in a race. And what he doesn't know is that one of the other race drivers is trying to smuggle some special alloy, some new metal, out of the country. But unfortunately, this other driver dies in a crash, and with his last breath, he tells Peter Flint, you know, that he's got to get this metal out of the country, which is Austria. And some Germans turn up after this same metal, and he has to make an escape. And that's basically the first story. And when he gets back and he reports, you know, what he's found, that's when he gets recruited. But the twist in the tale here, the twist in the story, is that he's not going to break cover at all, and he's going to remain in Britain and be seen as a, you know, maybe a conscientious objector or a coward. And that's going to keep his cover so that, you know, nobody knows that Lord Peter Flint is this special agent.
Yes, and he's almost, I noticed on the Wikipedia page, it compares him to the Scarlet Pimpernel in that he's this sort of dilettantish fop in a way, or at least that's his cover, isn't it?
For sure. Anytime he turns up at, you know, a London club or whatever, somebody's given him a white feather, you know, the sign of cowardice. There's people commenting on, oh, there's that you know, that coward Flint again, you know, should strip him of his lordship and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, he tries hard to take that take that kind of cover seriously.
Yes, and he actually, in actual fact, as you know, as you say, he is really Britain's top secret agent, taking orders from the mysterious Kingpin, which is another nice touch.
Yes, indeed. And Kingpin, that's interesting because, yeah, in the original series, that's who his boss was, Kingpin. But in the new stories that came out just a few years ago, Kingpin has been replaced by General Fergus. So I don't know exactly what happened to Kingpin, but he doesn't seem to be around anymore.
I hope they weren't too concerned that Marvel would sort of come claim the Kingpin.
Well, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. And to go back to Lord Peter Flint, you've said he's a race driver. He's got the Bentley car, but he, mm-hmm. as well as driving incredibly well, he can do everything, can't he? I mean,
Oh, goodness me, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, in that first story where he's introduced, you know, let's just have a little flick through it. I mean, he does everything, right? So he's a race driver. He's in the race at the beginning. He then dives off a cliff. He swims through freezing water. He climbs onto a cable car, you know, leaps from there, races, skis across country, steals a plane. After pole vaulting over the wire fence into the airport, steals a plane to get back to Britain, ends up on a horse, you know, he parachutes, he's on a motorcycle, and that's all within, I don't know, the first 9 pages. So, you know, it's like watching one of those opening scenes of James Bond, you know, and I guess that's a character he's kind of likened to.
Yes, I mean, he is, you know, Peter Flint is basically James Bond during World War II, with the cover story of being this foppish aristocrat who's not interested in the war at all, because he excels at everything. And as you say, on the first page, we, you know, he's skiing, there's a castle, there's a cable car, 8 action-packed pages, it promises us, and it doesn't sort of... It lives up to that promise, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I think every story is kind of the same. You know, all these skills that that's demonstrated in the first episode are used in later stories. In fact, just flicking through the stories, we mentioned a bit of kind of being the World War II James Bond. And actually, in I think the second story, there are a few panels where he does actually look like Sean Connery.
Right. I'm reminded for some reason of the Olympic sport, the modern pentathlon, where they have to ride and run and shoot and swim and fence. And that sort of feels like Peter Flint. He can do all of that, can't he?
I think so. It's amazing what you can what skills you pick up at a British university.
Yes. His public school education has stood him in good stead to be Britain's number one secret agent. Tell us a little bit more about just some of the tales that he gets, or some of the adventures he gets up to. You've mentioned the first one of this mysterious alloy that he has to smuggle a sample back to Britain. Of course, he starts having regular run-ins with the Nazis as he goes on, doesn't he?
Yeah, and there's even recurring, you know, bad guys. Carol Shaft in particular is one of the characters who I certainly remember reading back in the day. And he's a kind of Peter Flint's, you know, opposite number that works for German intelligence, though he's not really a Nazi sympathizer, but he's still fighting for his country. And occasionally they have to work together. In fact, there's a bizarre story where they end up both going to South America to try and help people escape from their respective embassies, which have come under siege during a kind of a revolt. And there's a quite a comedic scene where they're both wearing kind of big Mexican hats. It's quite funny. Yeah, the kind of stories it's involved in are usually about trying to help some Nazi scientist back to Britain, you know, an atomic scientist, you know, or somebody that's working on some secret project, or it's smuggling something back to Britain that's been, you know, that's been stolen, some plans, the metal that I mentioned before, or some other object, some other kind of maybe new device or something. And I suppose it's when you see the collected stories together, you know, we've got, what, 6, 7, 8 stories or something there, that you start to see there aren't all that many stories you can actually tell about somebody going behind enemy lines. You know, it's all about getting something and bringing it back, or, you know, going somewhere to destroy it, you know, and that's kind of where you're stuck with the kind of storylines.
I'm just thinking, of course, that 1970s in the toy market was peak British period for Action Man, what the Americans would call the larger form G.I. Joe, but of course we knew him as Action Man. And of course Action Man had all the different costumes and uniforms. And I'm just flicking through, of course, Peter Flint's, he's a parachutist, he's in his frogman diver suit, a naval uniform. He does the Action Man uniforms and costumes as well as everything else, doesn't he?
Oh, goodness, yeah. I mean, I was a big Action Man fan as a kid. I think there are pictures of me on my 4th birthday with Action Man, you know, dolls, and I had lots of, you know, costumes and things. Still got one or two, I have to say. Still got one or two in the loft. And, yeah, it was a big thing until kind of Star Wars came around in 77, 78, and all the toy lines came out then. But, yeah, it was a huge you know, toy at the time. And yeah, you could see it reflected in this comic book. So you could imagine kids, you know, acting out some of these scenes with their toys. I remember I always wanted, there was an Action Man toy. It was like a little spy briefcase with a little kind of gun that could kind of clip together. And I do remember thinking, oh, he could be Peter Flint. And I did have a blonde-haired Action Man as well. So I'm pretty sure that I must have played Codename Warlord with my Action Man.
Fantastic stuff. And then often at the end of an adventure, he turns up at some London society dinner where he'll be presented with the inevitable white feather, which he says he'll wear on his lapel as a badge of honour.
That's right. Yeah, there's these tropes that keep recurring in the stories. Yeah.
So the stories are great fun, great adventure during World War II with Codename Warlord. The creators, now obviously this is slightly more tricky because this is the period when British comics, we didn't know who the creators were. We know that DC Thompson were at this time quite jealously guarding the identities of their creators, treating them in fact as their own secret agents, as I've put in their notes. Roger Kettle, the writer, best known for doing the long-running Bo Peep strip in the Daily Star. As far as I know, I think Roger Kettle's still with us, so I don't know what else he's done, but I gather he was one of the ones that helped create the character.
Yeah, it's quite a change of tack from going from Bo Peep to Warlord. That's quite a stretch, I have to say. So hats off to a writer who's got that kind of range.
And the Argentinian comic book artist Horacio Altuna is also still active as well, thank goodness. He's the only one that I could find a reference to as having worked on these early Warlords.
I'm pretty sure we've probably seen Ron Smith doing Warlord at some time, but not in the earliest days, but maybe a bit later on. Neville Wilson as well. Mike Dorey, I think, has done some.
Has he?
I'm pretty sure there are Mike Dorey Warlords. I was having a look through some of my Warlord annuals, but I couldn't see any Mike Dorey. I could see certainly Mike Dorey's art in there for various stories, but not Warlord. But I think he has done, because I've seen some images online that I'm pretty sure are Mike Dorey's work.
You know, now you've said that, I'm looking at one of these stories and it's Ron Smith, isn't it?
In the book, yeah, I thought so too. There's one that has got a kind of the hallmarks of his work.
Absolutely. And Mike Dorey will be at Lawless this year. I shall ask him about his work on Codename Warlord as well. Not about a month after this episode comes out, hopefully we'll be at Lawless so we can ask him then.
Aye, good.
But I don't know about any of the others. It's tricky to identify them. We maybe have to show them to David Roach, who would be able to tell us straight away.
Perhaps he would be the man to probably be able to identify some of those artists, that's for sure. Writers, we're never going to know, are we? We're just not going to be able to, unless somebody has some insider knowledge. But I guess they would have probably put that in this collected volume if they'd known themselves at DC Thompson. So, you know, it's maybe lost in the archives somewhere.
Well, before I ask you a little bit about the recent revival of Codename Warlord, we'll just mention this collection because Gordon Tate is the sort of heritage editor at DC Thompson now. He's listed in the back here with Georgia Battle, who we know works on Commando, Kate McAuliffe, Daniel McCachy, Michelle O'Donnell, and Gordon Tate. We have to thank them for actually, you know, putting this out and giving us some reprint of this material. I've got, as I say, I've got the digital version from 2022, bang up to date 2024. You've got the hard copy.
Yeah, that's right. And I had hoped to actually get this hard copy directly from the Commando team because it was the Glasgow Commando swap meet couple of weeks ago. And the team arrived. Kate was there. So was Gordon. And they did not have any Warlords with them whatsoever. And I asked, I said, oh, I was hoping you'd have a Warlord because, you know, my local W.H. Smith didn't have any at the time. And they said, well, do you know what? We wanted to bring some, but we just can't because they're in such high demand that we weren't allowed to bring any copies.
Oh,
so okay. That is very good news. And I was very lucky because literally, I think 2 days later, I was in my local WH Smith and they had two copies in. So I snapped one up.
Well, I'll perhaps jump ahead in our notes slightly then and mention that this is available in paperback for $14.99 now. But from judging from what Gordon's told you, get them quickly is the answer.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly, it took a while to appear in my local shop. You can order them online, and that might be your best bet, I think.
Right.
But yeah, get in quick.
And it is delightful to actually have to start to be getting some of this DC Thompson stuff reprinted and collected, which is delightful. As I say, I've got two digital files. So I've got the Kindle version of Codename Warlord, which is currently for about £1.90, absolute bargain. And then something we're going to talk about in just a moment, the Warlord Files, is also on digital for £4.30. But actually that is included in your hard copy, isn't it? This is the recent revival.
Yes, that's right. So this hard copy is about, I think, 170 pages. So we're talking the two new story or two recent stories plus the first half dozen stories from the original the run in Warlord comic. Yeah.
So this is, if I'm right, this is from 2019. They revived Codename Warlord in the pages of Commando. Is that right?
That's right. Not just Codename Warlord, but around the same time they also brought back Braddock, who was more, I think, a Victor. I don't think he was a Warlord character. I think he was more Victor. And they also brought Union Jack Jackson back as well. There were, I think, two stories for each of those characters. And somebody was asking Kate, the editor, about that a couple of weeks ago in Glasgow. And she says something like, yes, there are currently two new stories, the two new stories that came out in 2019. So what that means, I'm not entirely sure. But it's just like one of those little coded messages that you might get from Warlord, from being a member of the Warlord Club.
So that's editor Kate McAuliffe.
Yes.
Who, of course, is listed, as I say, in the editorial on the Warlord File. Commander presents the Warlord File. Now, stories written by Ian McLaughlin and illustrated by Manuel Benet. And am I right in thinking that he illustrated one of your first stories for Commando, Colin?
Yeah, Manuel Benet did the very first story that I did for Commando. That's right, Five Little Soldier Boys. Yeah, and I think his art style is kind of classic Commando. You know, he's been doing it for a long time, and his style very much suits Commando. You know, it's kind of the hallmark of where Commando sits at the moment, I think. You know, he's bridging that kind of classic style with a, you know, maybe a slightly more modern edge as well.
So, as I say, these stories are collected in your hard copy. The art switches to what I would describe as the sort of Commando format. So these are sort of two or three panels at most on a page for the sort of smaller pocket-sized Commando that we're used to.
Yeah, that's right. So when they came out in 2019, it was a standard Commando size, but a bit of a surprise that these characters were returning. You know, it wasn't really forecast by anybody or leaked. You know, but of course, in this new volume, they're printed quite substantially bigger, about, I don't know, 150% bigger or something. So you're seeing, you know, the artwork in kind of a lot more detail. But I have to say that it stands up well to being enlarged to this size. It does really work very well. There's kind of strong blacks and whites look really good on the page.
Absolutely. And, you know, there he is, Lord Peter Flint, as ever, been introduced at a society dinner, getting his white feather, driving off in his Bentley, and then next thing he's parachuting behind enemy lines and meeting up with, top flight Nazis and femme fatales all in the first few pages. As ever, he's a busy chap, Lord Peter Flint.
Yeah, I mean, taking a leaf out of that, you know, very first story from 1974, let's just leap straight into the action and don't stop.
Yes. You know,
that's pretty much what happens for 63 pages.
And if we talk about another great artist that you've worked with, we mentioned Manuel Benet. Of course, when Codename Warlord returned to the pages of Commando, we got some covers and some other supporting artwork from one of Scotland's greats, didn't we?
Yes, indeed. Ian Kennedy did one of the covers, the first cover for the newly revised kind of Warlord, and that's replicated here in the book in full colour, sort of double spread, so you're seeing the front and back of the comic. And these new Codename Warlord books came out a year before I was writing for Commando, but it was actually the very day that I got asked to write for Commando, I was given a copy of that Ian Kennedy print of that cover that he did for Commando, which was incidentally signed by Ian as well. So, and that's up on my wall here, where I'm sitting at the moment. So it's a treasured possession.
I bet. Wow, what a lovely thing to get on the day that they also asked you to start writing for Commando as well. Great timing, and yeah, how lovely to see a bit of Ian Kennedy in this collection.
Yeah, for sure, and. You know, Ian did a lot of the covers for the annuals as well, and the summer specials. Just amazing, artwork. I don't know, think Ian ever drew Warlord the strip. He Union Jack Jackson. He certainly drew that, and perhaps one or two of the other strips. But I don't think he ever did Warlord. But you know, somebody could correct me if I'm wrong.
Fantastic stuff. So we've got Commander presents the Warlord file, which, as I say, is included in the Codename or Commander presents Codename Warlord collection that you've got, and that is now available in hard copy. As we've already said, get them while they're still in print.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, we've got the first story, Codename Warlord, and then we've got the second one, Codename Warlord: Ship of Fools. All written by Ian McLaughlin and artwork by Manuel Benet.
Fantastic stuff. Do you get any other supporting materials in the hard copy?
I don't know if it differs from what's in the digital. I guess maybe right at the start, there is 50 years of Codename Warlord, because this is the 50th anniversary. So there's a couple of pages there which has got, you know, a few kind of different pictures mashed up. I can see some Ian Kennedy stuff there, some Manuel Benet's more recent stuff. And it also mentions the Warlord Club, the secret agent club that you could join, and they've got depicted there the little wallet, the identity card, and the badge that you could get if you joined that club, which I was a member of back in the day, I have to say.
Fantastic, yes. You had your Warlord badge, medallion, and the Codebreaker.
Yes, indeed.
And we should perhaps say, before we talk a little bit about Commando as a comic, we should say that DC Thompson does appear to be dipping their toe into the reprints market, which is much, you know, I think much appreciated and welcomed. And perhaps, as Gordon said to you, that perhaps indicates how this collection has been such a hot seller straight away.
Indeed. Well, you know, this new collection does say Volume 1 on the front, which does suggest that there could be a Volume 2. I mean, I know nothing, and if I did know, Eamon, I would have to kill you. I can only speculate that there may be, you know, other volumes coming. I have heard some rumours of perhaps some other characters making a return, but, you know, that remains to be seen.
But also, if you search for Commando Presents on the Kindle, there's a few collections there already of some other classic Commando stories, I think.
Yeah, there is. There's the Gurkha Files. So you've got a whole bunch of Gurkha stories. You've got A War at Sea. You've got some sci-fi stories, because there's quite a few sci-fi stories over the years in Commando. Some spooky stories are collected in the Fear Files. And there was a series a few years back called The Week's War. And it was about, I think, five different members of this family with the surname Week. We all fought in one or more wars, and each issue kind of tells their individual story. So they've been collected digitally as well as a bunch of other books. I mean, there's some Star Blazers, Spellbound, the old kind of spooky, kind of misty-like book from DC Thompson, and also some romance stories as well have been collected. And they're really inexpensive for digital. You know, you can pick them up for £2 or £3, I think, most of these.
I think at Thought Bubble, probably 2022, somebody at, it might have been Gordon Tate, I can't remember, but somebody thrust the hard copy of the Spellbound collection into my hand, and I bought that. I'm going to have to try and persuade Professor Julia Round to come back on the podcast and talk about Spellbound, having done Misty with her, because that's another fascinating one. But as you say, there's the Fear Files, there's a sci-fi one. I see there's some... I've got them flicking up in front of me on the Kindle at the moment. I see that there's some Alan Hebden stories in there. So there's, you know, there's certainly there's some stuff available digital, but of course the hard copies as well. That's what we really want.
Yeah, I mean, when these were announced digitally, you know, there was a bit of a, you know, there was a lot of chat online, a lot of discussion about, oh, when are we getting these, the hard copies of these? And slowly we're starting to see them, you know, with the second volume of Star Blazer came out, then Spellbound, and now Warlord. So who knows? Who knows what's going to happen there? I guess it will all be down to, you know, how many are selling.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, do get hold of a copy of Codename Warlord from Commando Presents, either in the hard copy, if you can find a copy, or digitally. DC Thompson don't have a big computer games company like Rebellion behind them to help with putting out this stuff. So we need to encourage them as much as we can. I mean, it is very much welcomed. I think we would say that, isn't it? You know, we want to have more of this.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, it's been a while since we had collected editions like this. I mean, I think my Commando annuals, just glancing over at my shelf there, they're like 1990 and 1991. You know, these were kind of a few collected kind of Commando stories, yeah.
So I'll ask you about Commando in just a moment, but let's go back to the collection you've got in front of you and talk about Grail Pages for a moment, Colin, where we play this game that we imagine we could identify all the original art and that we could afford it and buy you a page or two to display on your wall. What would you have, either from the original or from the revival, or including a touch of Ian Kennedy?
Well, you know, I did have a good think about this. I've looked through this new volume. There's some great stuff in there. But what I really remember, I think, most about Warlord is the Ian Kennedy covers on both the annuals and the summer specials. And summer specials, obviously, it would be something that my dad would probably buy when we were going on holiday, and I'd get to read it after him. And there is one that sticks in my mind, and it is an Ian Kennedy piece. And maybe oddly enough, it doesn't actually have any of the popular characters on the front cover. It's the 1987 summer special, which has a commando with a Thompson submachine gun running straight towards us in, you know, classic Warlord style. I think it might be the raid on San Nazir is what's been depicted there, because there's a ship in the background and the commandos seem to be kind of leaping off it onto the shore. And I think that is absolutely, you know, classic Ian Kennedy stuff. I would love to have that one.
Fantastic. Well, I will track down at least the image of it and display that on all the social networks when this comes out, so that you can see what we're talking about. I'm just going to mention what I think it's actually the second story. I said it was the first story, but it's actually the double page spread that starts off the second story in Codename Warlord, which is the skiing one. He's skiing and there is a castle on a mountain just like Where Eagles Dare, and just like Where Eagles Dare there's a cable car, and on the next page he's hang gliding. I'm gonna have to try and find out if I can who the artist is. It looks recognizable, but I can't put a name to them at the moment, but I would love that one. Again, also partly for the Action Man nature of it all.
Yeah, I know. Hang gliders in World War II. Yeah, it's stretching it a bit, but it certainly has appeared in quite a few comic books over the years.
Yeah. Great stuff, Colin. Well, it's been fascinating talking about Warlord and the revival, and in particular, the derry-and-do adventures of Britain's top secret agent, Lord Peter Flint.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show and chatting about that. I mean, it's a nice blast from the past to revisit, so, you know, one of the earliest comics I ever read.
Well, let's stick with war comics for a moment with your own work. I'll just say that Commando, as a phenomenon, which is now in something like issue 5,700 and something, a British institution, is it not?
I know, to be here, about 63 years on, is just incredible. I mean, it's only really beaten by the Beano. You know, it's incredible, yeah.
Absolutely stunning. And I noticed, again, that Commando is now available digitally through the Kindle as well. I think it's a few issues behind what's on the shelves of WH Smith, but it does appear digitally as well. And of course, in 2020, you got your chance to write for Commando.
Yeah, that's right. And like I say, it was just soon after the Codename Warlord new stories came out, and I was at selling my own books because I'd written my own war stories, true war stories, about, you know, things that are kind of local interest to where I live, and I was selling it at this World War II event locally. The story, incidentally, is the first time that the Spitfire went into combat, way back in October 1939. So, and that happened locally, not too far from where I live. Anyway, I decided I was going to write a book about it and draw it. So I was at this event with Graham Neil Reid, who is also a Commando artist, but he had done the cover for this book. So we were at this this festival and we were selling the book, and Commando had a stall at the table. Gordon Tate was there, and he came across and he was chatting away, and he gave me the Ian Kennedy print from the Codename Warlord story, you know, which was signed by Ian. He also gave me a Warlord badge, which was very nice. But that was not the major prize that day. You know, he said, "Do you fancy writing for Commando?" And that was that. So, you know, I got invited to pitch some stories, and they bought some. And now currently writing, I think, my 17th story for Commando.
Wow, fantastic. Great stuff. And, you know, I guess they pair you up with the artist. I know you had, I read the interview you did for Down the Tubes about your first story with Manuel Benet. That was quite a positive experience because he was very sort of impressed with your story and you were very impressed with his art.
Yeah, I know. It was afterwards when the book was published, and you know, he got in touch and he said he enjoyed the script, and that's good because he's done a couple more of my stories since then. I've got a story with a recurring character, so there's been two issues with that character so far, and there's going to be at least another one.
Great stuff. I mean, yes, a British institution. What a story Commando is, and congratulations working on your 17th story for them.
Yeah, long may it continue. I enjoy doing it. It's great fun doing it and trying to come up with kind of new ideas, which is very difficult when there's nearly 6,000 titles already.
And tell us a little bit about your other comics, your own work, and what we'd find at Maximised Comics.
Yeah, not a lot there at the moment because an awful lot are out of print. You know, it's just expensive to get stuff printed. But war comics, history comics are my thing. You know, for a wee while, I heard people whisper and call me the history comics guy because I was doing, you know, books about Mary Queen of Scots, about William Wallace and, you know, people like that, before moving on to do war comics. So at the moment, the only books I think I've got currently on sale are my two war comics, which are Raid on the Fourth and Flight of the Eagle, which is another true story about a Polish submarine that came to Scotland during the war. And it's got a cover by Ian Kennedy. So Ian kindly did the cover for that, with the Polish submarine being depth charged. It's a really quite a dynamic kind of cover. And I've got the original up on the wall right here where I am just now. So that's what's there at the moment. I've done a third war story, which is The Adventures of Bamse. Bamse was the mascot of the Norwegian Navy during the Second World War. And he was kind of based, you know, not too far from where I live. He was a St. Bernard's dog. But I found I couldn't draw dogs very well, so I got my pal Julie Campbell to draw that story, and she did a very good job of doing that, way better than I could have done anyway. And I've got a new book which will be out soon in May, which is a story about my local place where I live. So Dunfermline is Scotland's newest city. So Queen Elizabeth, during her Platinum Jubilee year, she decided that, you know, some places were going to become cities, get city status. So Dunfermline was named a city, and that prompted me to think about doing a book about that, about, you know, the history of the city, because it's quite a place, you know. Andrew Carnegie, the libraries guy, you know, it was born there. King Robert the Bruce, you know, of, you know, Battle of Bannockburn fame is buried here. But to be honest, the book is about lots of little people, you know, lots of interesting people, about weavers, of inventors, of thieves, and kind of ordinary people whose stories have survived the test of time, you know. So that book's coming out soon, and we've got lots of different artists. I think 40 artists have been working on that. People like Vicente Alcazar, you know, Commando artist. We've got Mike Collins on there, Nigel Parkinson, and a whole bunch of other artists.
And that, presumably, details of that will be at maximise.co.uk as well.
That's right. As soon as it's available, as soon as it comes out, it'll be up on there for sale at that website. Yep.
And I notice you're at Maximised Comics on Twitter and Instagram. Is Instagram the best place to follow you at the moment?
Either of those places are good. Right. Yeah, I use them pretty much. I just post the same stuff to each.
Right.
So, yeah.
Cool. So head to maximise.co.uk. The links will be in the show notes. Follow Colin on Twitter and Instagram. Check out his work in Commando. Support Commando, the great British institution, but also support their reprint Commando Presents series, particularly if you can track down a hard copy of the Codename Warlord one. You've been sort of like showing me the hard copy, and it's quite a meaty volume and looks great in hard copy. I've been going off the digitals.
Yeah, it's a hefty tome, about 170 pages, and if I ever need to prop a door open, this is good. This will do the job.
Do the job nicely. Excellent. Well, Colin, I'm glad we finally managed to arrange this. No doubt we will bump into each other at Thought Bubble. Lawless this year, will you be there?
Unfortunately, no. I decided not to do Lawless this year. As much as I love it and I really wanted to go back because it was the 10th anniversary, it also coincides with the launch of my new book. So
right. Okay.
Couldn't do both.
You'll be busy. Okay. Well, we'll see you at Thought Bubble, hopefully, this year.
Yeah, and if anybody's at Enniskillen, I'm planning to go there in June as well.
Oh, right. Yes, of course, the wonderful Enniskillen. I was lucky enough to go there last year, which was fantastic. Paul Trimble puts on a great show. Colin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Eamon. I'm so glad we finally made it and were able to talk about, you know, this new book, this new old book.
This new old book that, yes, has finally got us to actually organise a date that we've been talking about for a couple of years at least. And thank you to everyone for listening to Megacity Book Club. As ever, all the links, including links to Colin's work, are at megacitybookclub.com. Follow the pod on Facebook, Instagram, Mastodon, Blue Sky, the 2000 AD forums. We're probably on a new social media platform called White Feather, if you can use your code breaker to crack the code and get in there. Or you can email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And that will do us until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book. It's goodbye from me, and
it's goodbye from me. Wow.